And welcome to another episode of Subscription Radio. I'm your host, DJ Fish, aka Ben Fisher, aka a rodeo boy. I'm here with a friend and someone I'm really excited to have on the show, Andre Rudnick, who we actually met at a subscription conference in Orlando. I don't even remember how long ago, how many months ago. It wasn't that long ago.
It's one of those years, you know, that it just feels like it goes on for many. 6 months just doesn't feel like that long. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. Just a little bit of background on him. He runs an agency called Good Subscription Agency and works with brands doing at least seven figures on specifically subscription strategy. And, you know, part of actually what I liked and even preparing for our conversation was going through and just looking at sort of your philosophy around, you know, it's not about installing a subscription app. And I think any brand that has any decent volume already knows this. It's about nuance. It's about pricing. It's about how it's implemented to match your business. And so I think part of what I know I'm hoping to get out of this conversation is us to go deep in a few topics that we've already talked about and actually have like some to learn a little bit about what you've been seeing and what you've been learning working with the brands you do. And I don't know if you want to take a second just to mention a few of those brands. I know it's like Dwell and Magic Delivered. I would see you to table. Is there anyone else that is worth mentioning that you'd like to?
Yeah, it's a couple of Shopify brands, a couple of Shopify Plus brands. We're a fairly boutique agency, but we've lucked into niching into something like seemingly very small. It's like if whenever I tell somebody who's not in e-commerce, it's like, oh, we just do Shopify and we just do subscription brands on Shopify. That's the only things we service. But within that, there's a ton of stuff. Go number two, we're actually helping them rebrand. That's a big bamboo toilet paper brand they're taking on, Cloud Paper. They're adding on a bunch of things too. So a whole bunch of either replenishments and household items or seafood or membership boxes or loot boxes. We kind of cover, we've had experience with all of them. And what separates us, I think, is that a vanilla agency or a regular Shopify agency runs through probably 4-6 subscription projects in a year, right? And you constantly have those teams switch, and we do that many in a month.
Yeah.
So we either do split testing for subscribers, subscriber conversions, or churn optimization, onboarding emails, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you work across the gamut with a bunch of subscription apps, and so you've kind of seen it all.
Yes, yeah. We pick the app that's the best for the merchant. That's how I always look at it. And because every single business case is different and every single tech stack setup is different. So I am very, very, very skeptical of people migrating apps generally, because unless it's like a really completely revolutionary, oh, we're going to help a lot or reduce a lot of customer friction with this. Generally, it's like, okay, you have to really plan this out properly because it's a long, stressful process. And the tools you're going to get at the end better be worth it. So, but yes, we work across with all the apps.
Yeah. No, I am curious of the brands that you see migrating, are a lot of them migrating off of legacy Recharge and then they're finding a new home?
So yes, Recharge is, I mean, obviously by far the biggest subscription app out there. So, but proportionally you would see the most bleed from there. But also, yeah, after the Shopify checkout APIs happened, the industry for subscription apps just got wild. And now it's finally not a question of, oh, do you want to be on Recharge or Bold? Or it's like, no, what do you want your app to do?
Yeah.
And now you can actually look, and apps are competing on really like niched in functionality. So I know that I was at Bold when this happened. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of seen it on ground of what happens to a product team when your app gets pulled from the store. But long story short.
Was that Bold Checkout?
Bold checkout was
emoji.
I was Bold's third party checkout was like the linchpin that is currently the big center of their strategy too. And I was on the sales team where most of the enterprise deals were the Bold checkout. So at the time, it was something.
No, well, you know, before this, I had co-founded Cardhook, and so I went through that experience.
I know.
So no, anyways. Getting back on topic, that's helpful context. And I think you're right. There's, I would say, like 25 apps now that do subscriptions. And ultimately, what I've joked with people, actually not joked, what I've said to a brand is like, before I can even say if Rodeo is a good fit for you, it's like, I need to understand your business. Because you can go to a feature matrix and compare a dozen apps or even five apps. And someone's inclination might be to go to the one with the most number of features. What they don't realize, or most people don't realize, is it's not about the number of features. It's how personalizable are the most important features to your business and your business model, right?
Couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like one of those things where you kind of have to, I think intuitively it makes sense to a lot of people, but you look at a features and you're like, oh, this one has 50 features and this one has like 4. And I was like, when you think of surface area of a product, the brand that has fewer features typically can move faster, and then they can also invest more in building and integrating those different features. And so it's not binary. There's a continuum, but that's like one thing that I always encourage. I've encouraged brands when I'm talking to them, even if it's not in like a business setting, it's just like, just make sure you understand what it is you're trying to accomplish. And like, what are these features you're actually going to use that are going to move the needle, and not are the ones that like sound great? Because actually, at some point, I want to write a blog post. It's like all the features that sound great, but actually don't do shit. So that's on my list. Yeah. Anyways, I digress.
Yeah, I could throw out some SMS box controls. I've yet to see that really land and really hit. And because everybody makes a big noise out of that, but it's like, okay, other than just doing a skip and order, I don't want to manage anything over text, over written. Like, what is this basic? Yeah. Like, am I writing? Like, and you have to talk to this an intuitive system, but. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more there, because one of the really common things we do is, yes, migration, but app procurement is like a whole month long process where it's like, yes, we need to first of all understand what you need currently. What are you looking to grow into? Are you going to need gifts? Are you going to need to build a box? Are you going to need as flexible shipping schedules? And then being like, well, whose current setup is good? Whose future roadmap looks like? Can we? And so, you know, it's a lot of digging under and talking to product people too directly.
Yeah.
And being like, okay, well, what's on the horizon? And then, because it still blows my mind that people can decide on a subscription app, which is literally the backbone of your business, after a 30-minute sales call. Like, your 90% of your efficiency will be built right here with this one tool. So don't rush it.
Yeah.
Don't rush it.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's a great segue to, like, one of the first questions I like asking is, what do you subscribe to? Do you have any active subscriptions yourself?
Yes. Athletic Greens is the one that comes to mind right away. Mud Water is another one that my wife got. There's a cool Canadian brand called Bloom. They do kind of coffee supplements. It's all coffee derivatives. But yeah, that's kind of everything I can think of at the top of my mind. There's the CBD one, come to think of it. Yeah.
And are these all are there any subscriptions you've had that you canceled that come to mind?
Actually, I've come to cancel Mudwater and renew Mudwater.
That's interesting.
Yes, because I got it for my wife, and she wasn't a huge fan of the product. It was just didn't really work right for her. But the problem was I really liked their subscription setup, and I was really nerding out about their account setup and their upcoming orders. Because I thought they're doing a good job there. She wasn't a huge fan of the taste of the product, which is, again, personal to everybody. But then she was like, you know what? Actually, I figured out how to make this latte. I started looking through their recipe book, and I found one way to do it. So that's, again, coming back to good unboxing experience. I've kind of user watched her unbox this thing, and I didn't want to say anything. It was like, there's this whole recipe on the inside of the box, and that they want you to remember that recipe really well. But yeah, I'm on top of the usual Spotify's and Netflix's of the world. And I don't really want to separate those out too much, because I do think companies benefit, subscription companies benefit, if they start thinking like software as a service companies. Because I think the importance of onboarding, the importance of daily active users, the importance of user feedback and iteration, there's a lot that can be learned there. And again, this kind of religious focus around churn and how churn is so key. And
I'm curious, do you have a favorite or a recommended analytics package that you suggest to people?
Honestly, I've looked at a number of them. I've yet to find something that is as good as exports and Google spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've worked with Peel Analytics a little bit. And I like the flexibility. I think there's a couple, the platform is moving really well and is iterating quite a bit. So it's kind of a data aggregator. Seems to do anything. But are you familiar with Peel?
They're one of our partners, actually.
Here we go. So yeah, Peel has been kind of my big one. But yeah, and that's the one we generally set up if somebody's looking to level up their analytics.
I think the challenge that I've observed with around even analytics, and I think you know, an early part of our strategy was, I was like, I don't want to get into analytics because there's brands that have raised tens of millions of dollars just to do analytics. And unless you can't compete with that, right? You it's really about understanding the and defining the boundaries of the product you're building. And for us, it was around how do you build a great flexible subscription product that focuses on retention and driving repeat purchases. And but what part of what we've learned is that there's certain data that only we have access to. So for example, a brand is often wanting to be able to forecast inventory. And so what they need to look at is active subscribers that who are coming up and renewing and what are the SKUs that are renewing. You can't get that in Peel or any analytics product, right? Like there is nuance that I think with that said, I don't want to be getting in the world of us doing cohort analysis and like all of the different like sort of what was the first product the person purchased and then retention based off of that, because that's where you start building an entire BI tool where that's not our business. So yeah, it's an interesting, I wouldn't call it a quandary, but it's an interesting challenge to figure out identifying where are those moments where we can provide unique insight and value and that it's not super confusing, that it's not a part of the base analytics product that they're using and that we generally suggest them to use. Because for us, it's about focus and being experts at what we're best at. So I don't know. I'm curious. So as you continue exploring this, and I don't, and I would imagine you probably have your own opinion experiences around like data that brands want or need or that you need that you can't get through. And I mean, and maybe that's why you're talking about doing exports, right? Because you can get that. I mean, that would be precisely why you can do you're doing exports. But then are you importing it into a BI tool or you're just doing an Excel? And is that like a huge pain in the ass?
It is a bit of a pain in the ass. And the thing is, on the acquisition side, that's all fine. That's all taken care of. You can have a bajillion tools. But on the retention side, when you start, if you want to really look into a brand specific, it's like, oh, what are your retention patterns? And okay, after what order are people dropping off? And how do cancellation reasons change as somebody is moving through order 2, 3, 4? Why are most loyal customers, why are the 20% top spend cohort, why are they why are they canceling? And what's the most common reason there? So like, unfortunately, I wish I had a good tech stack that I could say, hey, you know what, we do our exports and it's all fairly manual still, but I almost find that to be good because how you define your key metrics, like you almost have to think about it a little differently for every single brand. So every single brand's trying to solve slightly different issues when it comes to retention. And therefore, it's like doing manual exports and looking at, okay, well, what are the most common frequencies? What are the highest customer lifetime spend segments doing? And how do we mimic that? And how do we maybe explain that through onboarding and be like, hey, listen, here's how you change your update frequency or update your existing frequency. Here's how the best way to do it. I really like the idea of... There's this book called The Membership Economy by Robbie Kalman Baxter.
Yeah, I've read it. It's one of my favorite books.
Yes, it's a great book. And she talks about super user onboarding. So make somebody feel...
It's like an old book.
Yeah, it is. Well, here's the... Well, that's why actually gives me so much comfort is like, oh, I built my whole agency on this kind of... Was this a fad? And so I started looking into it. It's like, no. Like subscription and membership-based stuff has been working for forever. And there's a reason for it. And she emphasizes super user onboarding, and you want somebody to feel like they have, you know, like they're walking into a house they've owned for a number of years. So it's like they know all the ins and outs, all the tricks that your most super advanced users have found out on their own. And you want to explain that to a person within, even before their first box arrives, before their first package ships. And yeah, and that's one of the things around retention. But yeah, I think roundabout way, churn tools, and they're kind of individual to find out what are those sticking points and how do you hit that retention point? No.
Yeah, it's funny. You just reminded me of like one of my favorite quotes from her book. And it's why I'm like, I joked on the beginning of this call, like I joke where it's sort of like the anti-subscription subscription company, because subscriptions are a business model, right? Has not... If we're talking about jobs to be done, the consumer is not wanting a subscription. What they're wanting is convenience. They're sometimes wanting curation. They're wanting, but what they don't want is too much product. And membership is sort of the parent. And below that, subscriptions are a business model. And so it's really, and when you think about when consumers subscribe to something, they're not necessarily subscribing to an individual product. They're subscribing to the brand. And that's really a membership. And so anyway, I'd say anyone listening should definitely pick up her book. We'll put it in the show notes. But I'm glad you brought that up because you're actually the first person I've ever spoken to who's brought it up. And so that I just geeked out for a second. So sorry.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is there's like four books on subscriptions.
Yeah.
Maybe also on arrogance, but I think
you wrote Scribe,
the founder of Scriberbit. But a subscribed automatic customer was a really good one too. And that one's a little more around subscription model and around but business acquisition. And it's again a lot of books that are focused on and have been talked about in the software as a service, and essentially think about any business with a recurring revenue model, and then reapplying that to e-commerce seems like it has to be done, and it is done by good brands. That's how they grow. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. So going into how good brands grow, I think, I don't know if there was a specific spot you wanted to jump into, but I know one of the things you were talking about is like common assumptions you were seeing. Like before the call, you were talking about like, it's insane how brands default to 1 month, 2 month, 3 month intervals. I don't know if that's one of the common assumptions you had that come to mind, but basically it's even like picking your subscription frequency and aligning it or adjusting it. Yeah. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So the common assumption around, I think a couple of common assumptions that I think holding subscription brands back. First of all, if you're, and we've ran split tests around this, and this is like some of the best performing ones from this year. If you're offering, so for example, your replenishment product, if you're offering one time and subscribe and save, opt people into subscribe and save. If it's truly a cheaper, zero risk, best way to buy your product, opt people into it instead of having them even, and make it a simple opt out. And what we found is it had zero effect on conversion. And so total checkout revenue and conversion. And subscriber signups were boosted by about 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of apps, for some reason, don't even allow that out of the box where, hey, you can't pre-select subscribe and save as the default on the product page. I think that's one. Another one is, yes, the preset frequencies that come from the app. Think about that for a couple of seconds and think about what is the consumption habit and what is the best way for us to make it as natural as possible. And the answer there is, well, you don't want presets, but you want flexible frequencies down the line. And you want to onboard somebody to let them know that, hey, if this is too much or too little, because you've brought up a perfect point at the beginning, is customers are still the most common reason is to have too much is the most common reason to churn. And that is not a reason to churn. That is a reason to delay, reschedule. And if your customer portal is very hard to get to, don't get me started on Shopify's account page and the customer portal,
right.
Account invites not being mandatory, and which kind of, yes. So I'd say those two big assumptions are a good start. But I think even the bigger parent one that we talk to brands quite often and actually struggle with, even with seven-figure brands, is this hyper-focus on acquisition. And this idea that, and maybe it's because maybe e-commerce has been so cheap to advertise on and so effective for such a long time with really highly targeted ads with Facebook that you could get away with, hey, we just need a conversion funnel. We just need to give away 50% off on our first box. And if they order twice or three times, this is great. We don't need anything. We're already profitable. But that's proving to be more and more untrue, and with customer acquisition costs going through the roof. So the other side of that coin is, well, if your acquisition is going up, you need to focus on retention. And that is actually where you're going to find the budgets to build. And that's when you're going to find profits. One of my favorite things to remind people is that your most profitable marketing email you send out every month is your upcoming order email. And I love to bring this up around Black Friday, Cyber Monday. It's like, okay, well, do you have a gift, some small thank you to your current subscribers? Because guess what? If you're sending out an email and it says, hey, when you spend $100, you get this $10 product for free, guess which one's going to perform better? The one you send to an existing customer who's already got that queued and all you have to do is just remind them that this is coming and here's a thank you, or somebody who's never bought from your brand and they're thinking, ah, that's not worth it. So overemphasizing an acquisition and forgetting that we've known this for a while. And I'm actually yet to find the real source of this quote, but
yeah,
it costs five times to sell to a new customer than it does to an existing one.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. That's an age-old adage, I guess. But that's interesting and that makes sense. And I think if I was approaching, so my understanding of what you just said has got me thinking is I would want, so I'll say that the feedback I've gotten or the sentiment I've heard from brands around the upcoming order reminder is split. What I say is very similar to you, which is it's the highest opened email that you're going to send. So it's a great opportunity to do like upsells and cross sells. For a lot of brands, their concern is it's also the person that when someone cancels. As a designer, like my background's in design and programming. As a designer, I'm like, it's a horrible user experience as a consumer to not feel like it's easy for me to know ahead of being charged. And that ultimately, net net, you're going to make more money and have happier customers providing the flexibility and clear communication that comes with communicating through SMS and through email. You know, but what's important there is you also incorporate opportunities for them to swap, do add-ons. Because again, going back to what you were talking about of people canceling because not because they don't like your product, but they just have too much, being able to offer them an easy way to swap for like just this upcoming month is really important. But I love what you said around providing almost like a free gift tier, right? Where, and you could dynamically do this for every customer and you could split test it, but it would be effectively taking what's the order value of their upcoming order and then saying, if you spend $25 more or $50 more, you get this free gift or you get something. I actually haven't seen that done before. So now I'm curious to take that back to our team and talk to some brands and see who wants to experiment with that. I mean, it's really interesting.
I understand the hesitation and yeah, the idea of, yes, we are afraid. We don't want to prompt cancellations. Here's how I've seen this happen play out a couple of times is a customer either wants their next product or they want it or they don't. And if they don't, they will cancel after their payment's been charged.
Yep.
The problem there is it's going to go through your it's going to go through your support. It's going to clog it up and create a terrible customer experience in general. So good luck winning them back, even a harder thing to do. And on the other hand is if they still want your product at some point in the future, all you have to do is give them, and if it's not right now or if it's not the right time, give any option is better than cancel, right? So pause, delay, swap, downgrade, give it as a gift to someone else. All of these options, you simply have to provide just a better option than cancel on their next order. That's the kind of the best way to bust that objection.
I would say the give the gift, give your order to someone else. That would be on my list of features that no one ever uses.
Okay.
No, because I've seen it marketed a lot and I've heard it never works. Because if you think about it anecdotally, it's like, let's say the average order value is $30. You're sending it to someone, you don't know if they even want it. Like the amount of friction. I don't mean to call that out, but I've seen that advertised and I've spoken to brands who, when they do demos with companies offering that, like, oh yeah, no one ever uses it on the consumer side. And as someone who's a consumer of subscriptions, I'm just like, it just seems like so much work to pick someone. And then it's like $30 and you're like, are they even going to use it? Am I just like wasting money? It's funny that, I mean, please correct me if you have evidence that's to the contrary.
I'll be honest, I've yet to see that gifting the next upcoming order as a thing.
Yeah.
It falls into like, I like the idea of just giving people more flexibility around what to do. Yeah. And yes, you don't want to overburden them with 50 options.
Yeah.
And we do work with brands that seemingly would be a good brand fit around memberships and around kind of community specific memberships where it's like, oh, I want to send a free month to a friend. And that's how a lot of their referrals are working right now. It's like you get a free month, give a free month. But yes, I am curious. And I feel like it's one of the things, perhaps if it's executed well, it's the same thing with referrals. It's like, if it's executed really well, maybe it would work. But it actually brings us back to like how infant and nascent this industry still is in e-commerce. It's like, we're still trying to figure out how to do good referral programs and we're still trying to figure out how to do good gifts.
And I think like one interesting lens to look at all these features is, what is beneficial to the brand versus to the consumer? The first examples you gave are beneficial to the consumer, swapping.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably adding to an upcoming order is beneficial to the brand, not the consumer. But swapping, delaying, skipping, those are beneficial to the consumer. What's beneficial to the brand is upsells and cross-sells.
You still
do. And then gifting to a friend. And so my general assumption is, at least with the upselling and cross-selling, I, as the consumer, am getting the benefit. And so I would have the least amount of we'll call it motivation or incentive to do, oh, I'm not even going to get the benefit. Although you framing it as not that the package is being sent to someone else, but instead they're effectively being sent a membership, or I'm sorry, like a free month. And what would actually be interesting, the way I would implement that would be to, and I'm curious what your thoughts on this are. What I would do is, if you were to go down that road where you want to gift it, gift a month, I would send it as a gift card of sorts to a person that expires in 30 days. And if they don't redeem it, it goes back as a credit on my account. It might be way too complicated to explain to the consumer, but I'm just thinking about, like, maybe the person you're sending it to doesn't want the that particular product, or doesn't want it that much. So effectively what you're giving them is, you're giving them a gift card. And then if that gift card is never redeemed, I mean, at some point, hopefully I get to use the money. Maybe that's an unnecessary step, but this idea of gifting it to someone, and I mean, heck, you could even have the gift be worth twice as much as the actual value of your order, right? So it actually becomes like, if your upcoming order is worth $30, say you'll give, if you're going to gift it to someone, it has to be like, I'm sure there might be ways to game this, but if your average, if your order is $30, gift your friend, they'll gift to your friend a $50 gift certificate, right? So they're actually even getting more value than you would be otherwise. And so it actually really is a gift. It's not just a transfer of money.
Okay. Yeah, that's, again, coming back, we're so fresh in this industry, we're still trying to figure these pieces out. I think generally, though, I do advocate for flexibility, because I think what the three basic pillars of a good retention strategy, and speaking of nerding out, but the same books, part of the membership economy is like, you're building a long-term relationship with a brand or with a person. Mm-hmm. And I just got married this summer, so I've been trying to, you know, try to put some of this into practice. But three basic pillars of that for us, a good retention strategy is, first of all, you need transparency around exactly that, upcoming order notifications being a big one, around your subscription tiers and savings tiers, when the upcoming orders are happening. So around that transparency and that communication. Flexibility is the other one. And that's what I mean. When that next order coming up is happening, do you have good options to allow that person? If you're just one frequency, one product every single month, no wonder people will churn. Because it's like, hey, listen, and if you have no other option other than cancel, maybe you can skip every month. And that's really, really annoying. And that's how a lot of brands even can scale to seven figures, with if the product is really, really good. But you need flexibility for people to stick around, because you need to meet them halfway. Because at some point in the real world, I'm not going to follow this thing. I'm not going to get the value out of the membership every single month, or I'm not going to want that loot box every 3 months or whatever it is. So and to my mind, flexibility means in pricing and frequency. So plan, step down, plan, step up, plans. And again, being able to either select your own frequency. I know operationally, that can be scary to some brands who are just shipping at set dates and so on and so forth. But flexibility makes sense. And then the third one being occasional pampering. You want to make sure that your customers and your subscribers feel like they are valued more than somebody who's a random visitor on your site. And this is the reason why we hate cable companies and phone companies, because I can't get the same deal as a longtime customer. Why can't I get the same deal as somebody who's just buying for the first time on Black Friday? So make sure that your longest term customers are getting the best offers.
Yeah. That's funny. That was brought up to me by the head of growth, who's a friend of mine at a D2C brand who's killing it. And his whole thing was, why are you not rewarding your best customers with the incentives that you're providing your new ones?
No.
And it was interesting to hear him say that, because I've heard the opposite from a lot of people. Not that they would frame it that way, but in effect, that is what they're doing.
Yeah. Again, the retention game is so much more long-term and sustainable rather than that, we need that quick win. Because here's an unpopular opinion. I think the idea of like customer lifetime value marketing companies just came up with that to completely justify whatever customer acquisition costs they want to justify. And I know that some marketing agencies talk about, you know, 30 day, 60 right. day, 90 day right. spend and cash multipliers. But at the end of the day, your customer lifetime value, like the formula is your total recurring revenue for a period, less your total costs divided by your churn. And that's what customer lifetime value means. At least for subscription brands, they can hop in and get that data easily. I understand why it's harder to calculate churn for non-recurring revenue models, but subscription brands really need to take that and run with that and really hold their agencies accountable. Because it's like, well, you know, but we still have some room to play with. And they're kind of offloading a lot of this to the merchant and saying, hey, well, you can break even on mm-hmm. later dates.
Right. As opposed to doing a compressed period or a certain time frame. And that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You don't want to make $90 over the course of 100 years. You won't have a business.
Yeah.
There does need to be a time frame.
I'm curious, actually. So this about order frequency, and I've yet to see good ways of subscription brands actually get people to use their product more often. Or, for example, how do you condense or drive that? Because that's a really important big piece. And you could say, hey, recommended, you know, you can do some design tweaks and get people an idea of how, if they're running out of product too soon and how to order a little faster, obviously, that's another really good way that only subscription brands can upsell, right? Is get somebody to order more often, simply, rather than trying to, and that's kind of boost your customer lifetime value. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on brands trying to emphasize sooner and more often. Yeah, ordering sooner and more often. And have you seen brands do that? Because on the other hand, I'm like, well, let's just customer pick their own frequency and pick when they want to order and just be top of mind for them when they do want to order this thing, household products, supplements, food, or do you try to increase their consumption habits?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think the example you gave of your wife and the mud water, we'll call it the recipes, is an interesting example. The friction of implementing a recipe is not necessarily small. I think what I've observed, and it depends on everyone, it depends on businesses, it depends on their cost of goods, but I know a lot of brands that have done really well by selling in bulk, where they actually don't want to be doing frequent purchases because of the cost of shipping, the cost of packaging. And so what they do instead is they'll push bulk orders. And I've seen that with several brands where, okay, it's like 90 days worth of product. And also the average order value is higher. So you're actually getting more money up front and you're reducing the likelihood of someone not renewing over the next, like if you send 6 months worth of product, that's basically, and if the person was otherwise going to be buying a month, you've now reduced the likelihood to zero that they're going to cancel over the next
4 months.
Right. Or during what would effectively be those purchases. And so you're getting all of that money up front. I mean, it's a similar concept to like prepaying for a year of service, right? And it's worth giving like some percentage discount if someone gives you all the cash today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen any good examples beyond the Mudwater one they're giving around driving frequency of consumption.
I've seen, yes, exactly, like supplement companies and drink companies, including something that to make it easier to consume, period. So they're talking, you know, hey, here's a welcome box experience with an accessory, like a milk frother or a shaker for your protein and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because again, it costs them nothing, but it's one less step. And it improves unboxing experience too. So that's one thing to think about. One company, Dwell, that we work with, they have this membership product and they send you a key tag every single month as part of their kind of key tag temporary tattoo. And they see this print. And the part of their welcome setup is like, hey, here's your keychain. You get this premium keychain if you prepay for the year. So that's part of that. But prepayments, you make a great point there. Like one really easy way to make sure to secure somebody over a course of a longer time than you typically your average subscription length is, yes, just build a prepayment plan and promote that. And I would say opt people into it and let them easily opt out again. So think about how software as a service companies opt you into a yearly plan and tell you, hey, well, it's going to be $39.99 a month if you pay for the year, but you can switch into a quarterly or a monthly plan, no problem.
Price anchoring.
Exactly. And I promise you, they sell a lot more plans doing that yearly plans doing that rather than going month to month. And there's a reason why they're so hell-bent on it. And I would imagine that it doesn't turn off and it doesn't impact their churn or their conversion rates on those pages if you pre-opt somebody into prepay and save versus
A and I think what's interesting there is there's the two different ways of doing prepayment. One of those is the one that we've focused on, which is actually prepaying and mailing in bulk. And the reason behind that is shipping costs and warehouse and your entire supply chain, right? One that you see more frequently is prepay and then receive monthly shipments of it. Mm-hmm. Does not save you on shipping, does not. But again, you're still getting the money up front, but the margins aren't as good. And so it depends on your business. Not every product is in a form or even depending on if there's an expiration to it that you can send a year's worth of it. There are some products you can send a year's worth, but if you send a year's worth of something that, like, I'm just imagining a bag of chips, that would take up the entire cabinet. So it doesn't work with everything.
Yes. Yes. No, it doesn't. I think it does. Actually, we've done a project this year with the loot box company. So they're essentially, think of it as a curated box. And they swapped from monthly billing and a monthly box to a quarterly box. And subsequently, obviously, average order value, because the box sizes went up, customers started saving 60% on shipping. And the conversion rates, you now have a quarterly product that is roughly 3 times more expensive than the original box.
Yeah.
To keep your cash flow. But the conversion rates for new customers haven't dropped. So you're selling a product that's 3 times higher. You're converting just as well. I mean, this is for this particular brand. Obviously, your results may vary and da-da-da-da. But something to think about. And their churn actually dropped by about 48% afterwards. So again, tells you about consumption habits and how often these boxes come. And shipping costs was a big factor for this. And they were doing a lot of international shipping. Mm-hmm. So this was a really good way for them to improve average order size and curb churn. And again, did not impact their conversion rates. And it's exactly like that. Bulking boxes into, instead of a 1 monthly shipment, let's just do a bigger shipment every 3 months. So again, a quarterly setup.
No, that's interesting. What prompted that experiment?
I'll be honest, wasn't my idea. The business owner, that was business owner's thinking. And I think it was around margins in general. And also, I think operationally, it was just a mess to fulfill every single month. It was just, you know, every single month you have. I have to come up with a better analogy than a final exam. It's like you have to run a marathon every single month rather than every three. So
no, that's super interesting, because I think part of what's valuable and even in these conversations isn't just what worked or didn't work for a brand, but like what was the thinking that went into it?
What was the thinking behind it?
And what was learned?
Yeah.
Positively or negatively, because we often just talk about the things that worked and not all the micro decisions you made along the way that, nope, that didn't work. So adjusted this. And this is what we learned because it didn't work.
Yep.
So I know one of the things you said that you were open to talking about was just, and let me know which of these two topics you think is more interesting for us to get into. One you mentioned was how good subscription brands think and like the KPIs they monitor and strategies. Another topic you mentioned was like frameworks and strategies to help grow subscriptions. And I know we've maybe possibly covered some of those things already that you had in mind.
I think there's a lot of overlap between those two, because defining the goalposts is kind of, you're forced to, like, once you define your KPIs, and what we've seen work is when customers do think about their CAC to LTV ratio, which is quite uncommon still for a lot of e-commerce brands to think about, but is very common for somebody. And if you're a business owner who's looking to build a lifestyle business, you might not think about it like an outside investor would and be like, well, how much free cash flow am I generating, or how healthy is my subscription business? And it's businesses that keep that in mind front and center. They're monitoring their customer acquisition costs, and when it comes to customer lifetime value, they understand the importance of churn. And churn becomes an obsession just as much as bringing down those CAC numbers. So to me, that's actually kind of what seems to be working for the brands that we're working with and growing with, is that focus on retention just as much as acquisition, if not more. And running churn tests and understanding, okay, well, how do we improve retention in general? So, and afterwards, it's like once you have that laser focus on churn. Like, okay, well, how do we build a really good retention strategy? And at that point, it's okay, well, what are the categories for churn and how do you handle each one? So we can go through, I would love to, yeah, because there's not enough conversation around churn in my mind, at least with brands. And because, again, I think it's maybe we're riding off of that cheap ad high is that you could have scaled to a specific size, but to break past that, you really have to look at where you're bleeding customers every single month. So passive churn and credit card dunning and expired prepaid subscriptions and day one cancellations and an active churn is like, well, okay, how do you mitigate active churn and people who are indeed canceling because your most common reason is I have too much?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think coming from the B2B SaaS world, I've always taken it for granted that people...
For granted.
And one of the questions, like when I'm talking to brands, is like, what's your monthly churn? And they'll be like, oh, we're doing great.
How many of them know?
They often
know. How many of them know the number?
They know, and they're like, we're doing great. We're at, you know, let's say like 7%. And I'm like...
7%.
In 10 months, you've lost 70% of your customers. And now, you know, there's certain benchmarks that are out there where I think the latest one, as I recall, is like... average subscription brand loses 50% of their customers within like 9 months, 9 to 12 months. Mm-hmm. It varies by category. It depends on a bunch of things. But I think any company that's losing 70% of any of their customers, it's even if that's the benchmark, it just seems like a bit of a crazy thing. Because if you were losing 70% of people who sign up for your product, what we talk about typically in B2B SaaS is expansion revenue. Right? Yeah. Like, oh no, you want to be like and it's not monthly churn. It's typically like, we'll talk like annual churn. And so it's, yeah, there seems to be both, I wouldn't even call it necessarily confusion. Maybe that is confusion of at what point should you be freaking out about product market fit? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously there's other metrics that you're looking at, as you mentioned, like CAC to LTV. When it's LTV, typically over the first, at least in SaaS, it's like the first 90 days of LTV, right? Like that's your CAC payback period. And so within D2C, I think, yeah, there's so many variables you're dealing with around supply chain and unit economics. But like, yeah, the churn one always surprises me where someone says any number and I'm typically surprised. Well, I'm mostly surprised when they're like, oh, we're doing great. And then I expect like some sort of like spectrum where it's like, okay, you could argue, we could have a conversation and maybe it would make sense. But when you start talking about 70% of your customers, that I do a bit of a blank face for a second and go, okay, let's talk about why, like, how is that happening?
Why is that happening?
What have you learned? Like, why is that happening? Because then it's a question of, do you have a healthy business? I mean, you certainly don't at those numbers. And then it's a question of, well, what are the reasons that you are at that and what can you do? And is there a way for us to help? I don't know. Is there anything that you've heard from brands where the response just kind of like floors you?
Yeah, I've had calls with brands that sometimes talk about, well, we have basically our customer acquisition cost is in triple digits and our churn rate, monthly churn rates are in double digits. But but you know what? That's a lot better than it was 2 months ago.
Right.
And part of me, yes. Part of me just wants to hold my head and, I don't know, bang it against the wall because, I don't know, some of these are conversations around with younger brands that are still very, very fresh to this, fresh to it and understand that don't yet understand what that feels like to sustain. And sometimes, yeah.
And with the smaller brands, like if they only have 100 customers, it's easier for, but still. I mean, it still has the same impact on revenue. But if you're at seven figures and you're using those numbers, then, you know, you're in a very dangerous position of we need to possibly be doubling down, focusing on a different part of our business, because if we continue investing money in growth, we're just burning it on the other side.
Yeah.
Which I think is what you were saying earlier.
Very much. And again, it comes back to my saying that your upcoming order email is your most profitable email, is your most profitable marketing email. Now, because profits are made on the retention piece. I think one thing that kind of makes me, kind of drives me nuts is when I see businesses still want to, reward new acquisitions and give discounts they would never offer to their existing subscribers. So that thing still blows my mind. And also, one crazy thing is, like, you might have a big direct-to-consumer brand, but you've launched subscription as, like, an accessory bolt-on at some point, and it was never the focus. That kind of blows my mind, too, as well, where it's the business model is so lucrative and so solid once you have it up and running, is when you see, yeah, massive brands that are giving you just a simple subscribe and save 10%. And again, not pre-sale. There's no real reason other than that. And yeah, it just kind of blows my mind that they would not drive that as be subscription first in that sense.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it is uplifting to see and to hear e-commerce brands come back and say, like, what if we went subscription only? What if we just ditched our one-time products, period? And I mean, I'm hesitant to recommend things like that too, because it's like, well, how much of your returning customer base? Because I have a suspicion that some people are just, and it depends on your demographics and your brand, obviously. Some people are just not open to subscribing at any condition. There's that too.
Well, and I think that the challenge of that too is it incentivizes people, well, you can measure the impact on conversion rate, but it incentivizes, like, most people, it's like asking to get married on the first date.
Yeah.
And it and one of the biggest frustrations I know from a lot of brands is people who sign up for the discount and then cancel immediately, where it's really it's incentivizing that. But yeah, I don't know. I've talked to people on both sides of the fence. Personally, just as a consumer, I want the flexibility. But no, my own feelings aside, I am fascinated about what actually the results are.
Yeah.
So I can only say anecdotally by speaking to brands that I know that only offer one or offer both. So, hey man, it's been really nice having you in the show. I think one question I like to ask anyone who's on is, like, do you have a big ask? Is there something that if it were to come true would change your world personally or professionally?
Yes. Opt people into subscriptions.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah. Thank me later.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, we have that feature where you can toggle it on or off.
Yeah. Yes. And I promise you, if make it easy to opt out.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you opt people in, it's a signal that it is indeed the best way to buy from your brand. And then if they want, they can always purchase one time and repurchase, and I'm sure you're going to have great email flows to upsell your subscribe and save program, but opt them in by default. You'll see some crazy, crazy improvements that cost you very
little. That's a very great selfless ROI. Request of something that would change your life.
Well, hey, I think for me, as the industry grows, and if we found ourselves somehow to be like the first agency to really niche into subscriptions on Shopify, and the more this industry grows, the better it is for us.
Obviously. Fair enough. I guess the what's in it for you is proxy. As brands are getting more subscribers, you're getting more business. All right. I'll buy that. I'll let you have it as a big ask.
Fair.
So if you're listening, experiment with opting people into subscription first. I'll say you can even, one thing that we've had brands do is run A/B tests, and then they make the decision based off that.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. But yeah, man, thanks so much for being on the show. I know that there are a couple perks that you are offering to people who are listening. One is $595 off for their first month of working with your agency.
Yep.
We'll put the link in the show notes. And then the other one was a free 45-minute subscription strategy call. Yep.
Yeah. So you'll get, if you want to get on the call and see how we can help with your retention or acquisition strategy, more than happy. And yes, if you go to goodsubscription.agency/Ben, you'll be able to get your coupon for the first month off, and it never expires. So might as well sign up for our email.
Awesome. Cool. And yeah, again, we'll put those in the show notes. And is there anywhere that people can go to, like, follow anything you're writing online? I know you're not active on Twitter, but through the site?
LinkedIn.
Yeah. Okay. LinkedIn.
LinkedIn would be the best place.
All right. So we'll include a link in that. Link to LinkedIn.
Yes.
Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on the show. And I don't know if you have any parting words, but it's been a lot of fun.
Hey, same. I'm honored to talk to you. You're an OG in this space. So it's a real pleasure, man.
Awesome, man. All right. Over and out.